Miracy.
It's not beyond me to say, pardon my ignorance on this, please teach me more. And I think that when they understand that you're actually a human who doesn't have full knowledge of something, they're more inclined to work with you.
Welcome to Lead as Human. I'm Sharon Richmond, and for more than 30 years, I've run a company called Leading Large, dedicated to helping C-level executives lead more impactfully. When we work together, we clarify their priorities, energize their organizations, and build cultures of accountability and respect. In this podcast, you'll get ideas to help you supercharge your leadership by hearing real-life executives who've intentionally built organizations where the customers, business, and employees all thrive together. These successful executives illustrate the principle of leading large. They know that as leaders, the power that comes with their position demands of them an equal measure of responsibility to their customers, employees, shareholders, and communities. In each episode, we have the opportunity to learn from the challenges and successes they've experienced on their leadership journey. My guest on the show today is Adrian Shepherd, the fire chief for the city of Redmond in Washington State. Chief Shepherd has been serving the city in this capacity since 2021. Prior to that, he was the fire chief in Richmond, California for several years, and before that role, he served in the Oakland, California Fire Department for 17 years, where he rose from firefighter to battalion chief. As the fire chief in Redmond, Chief Shepherd oversees all fire department and emergency medical operations, leading more than 170 uniformed and non-uniformed personnel. The department is responsible for serving a 45-square-mile area comprising a population of more than 300,000 people that's also home to such major companies as Microsoft, SpaceX, Amazon, and Nintendo. Prior to his 26 years of fire service, Chief Shepherd retired from the U.S. Air Force as a commissioned officer of 23 years, so this is a man who knows a thing or two about leading others. He also has a master's degree in personnel administration from Penn State. Those are the Nittany Lions. Is that right?
You're right.
That's right. Okay. Welcome to the show. So for our conversation today, would you prefer to be called Chief or Adrian?
I really appreciate Adrian.
Okay. Thank you, Adrian. So let's dive in and start a little bit with your military career in the Air Force. Maybe give us an overview of that leg of your leadership journey.
Absolutely. And good morning. Thank you for the kind introduction. I really appreciate it. And I am really excited to take this journey with you today. So
thank you. Me too.
Fantastic. And so a little bit about my background, Air Force-wise. Joined the Air Force in the mid-80s. After high school and completing a few years of college, I felt it was an opportunity to go in and actually expand about who it is I am. And I think it's important to say that I was born into a military family too. So I already had some sort of guidance in that regard. When I joined the Air Force, we had this one captain. I won't forget her. She was fantastic. And she recognized something in me and really encouraged me to finish my schooling. She got me through the schooling and ultimately put me through officer candidate school. And it was there where I really started to hone my leadership development and find out what leadership is about. Some of the things that I learned very early on about leadership is really you have to be authentic. And so you're given authority when you're in the military as a young lieutenant. You're going to have people and they're going to follow you to a point. And if you fail to lead, despite the authority that you may have on your collar, you will invalidate yourself as a leader if you don't show that you're authentic, that you're engaging, that you understand the mission and you understand your people. And so it's very important for us as leaders, and Colin Powell says it in his book, Leaders Eat Last, but you always eat with your people. And I've always tried to do that to make sure that I'm present with my people, making sure that I'm in the trenches with them, while at the same time making more than certain that I handle my responsibilities as a leader. So I see leadership as this competency-based spiral curriculum. You're always just spiraling up and learning more as you go along, but it's built upon the things that you learned previously.
I love that description of the spiral, and that's very much how I feel about the journey as well. And I think that other of our guests have shared that, but maybe not with that image. And so I do really appreciate that notion that we're always building on what came before. And I know what you said about the military, there is a lot of respect for hierarchy and authority, but I'm interested in hearing just a bit more about when you say be authentic, what kinds of things are you thinking about? What did you need to be authentic about and how?
So authentic leadership for me, I could just say being genuine, but really going out there and be vulnerable with your people. Let them know that you don't understand a system or something. Let them know that you're interested in them and that they're interested in your growth as well. You know, it's not beyond me to say, pardon my ignorance on this. Please teach me more. And I think that when they understand that you're actually a human who doesn't have full knowledge of something, they're more inclined to work with you. One of the things that I did very early on, as a lieutenant, you're in the pile with everyone else, but as you get more rank, you actually get your own parking spot and they'll put your name right there and it's right at the front door. And I always had a problem with that. And so when I got my name placard in my parking spot, the first thing I did is I took the name placard off the sidewalk in front of the parking spot. It was a little bit of a joke, but I wanted to do that. But everybody else, all my troops noticed that and they really appreciated that. And I said, hey, well, that spot's open for whoever gets here first. And so that's what I think about being authentic and let them know that you're human. So being human is good, bad, and different. You know, it's just, I'm just me.
I heard some humility there, and I heard some, I guess I'll call it a certain kind of egalitarianism, like a leveling. If you get here before me, you go ahead and take that front spot.
Absolutely.
So that's helpful, because when we say authentic, I'm pretty sure everyone means something different. So as you move through the Air Force, what are some of the lessons you carried forward into the first part of your fire service career?
Well, the first part of my fire service career wasn't really about leadership because you're a firefighter, so it's more about followership. And that's something that you learn both in the military and in fire service. It's a paramilitary type environment and in fire service. And so you learn, I need to follow directions of those ahead of me. And so that was one of the things that I did carry forward. In addition to the teamwork, the integrity, the honesty, I always think that I'm a person who is diligent and operates with this level of propriety. I think it's important that you do that. And so the early part of my career was about just being my very best as a firefighter and learning as much as I could. And at the same time, preparing myself for the next step in my firefighting career. And so bringing forward the idea that I have a growth mindset, the idea that I am a person of integrity, I think really helped me early on. I promoted quite quickly in the fire service. And I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing, but I think that it was built upon all the other lessons I had learned as a member of the United States military previously.
I have a question that's sort of rattling around in my brain about this, and it's something that I don't understand having never operated in that kind of a paramilitary environment, which is, as a follower, what happens if you see something that you think might not be safe or quite right, but you're in a chain of command? So how do you, as a follower, manage that?
Absolutely. I don't think that there's ever been a time where followership meant that you did it without question. Certainly, someone asks you to do something that is unethical, something that maybe you see something that your superior doesn't see. But this is that balance where, you know, it's democratic and autocratic. And on the fire ground, you know, you become a little bit more autocratic. And I understand that from my leaders. And I'm going to execute those orders. It's not time for debate. However, if it's unethical, certainly, I bring a set of values to the profession. Hopefully, they align with the organization and I can express that. But that's rare. But there is probably the opportunity for that to happen, but it's rare.
I just realized, having never really been in that kind of environment, I'm not sure how one does strike that balance. And so I think what you said is quite helpful. And when at any time that we're in an urgent situation or a risky situation or a pressure situation, there is a time for followership of a more obedient, which somehow sounds like a bad word, but I don't actually think it is.
No, it's not. I'll use the United States Marines. One of the things they talk about most often is discipline, and they're disciplined, right? And it's not a negative thing. People look at discipline as maybe something where you're being disciplined, but being disciplined is different than being disciplined. And I think that when you have discipline, you're better able to do your job. It keeps you out of trouble, and it also puts the onus on your superior. Your superior always maintains 51% of the vote. And that's something that I hold right now. That helps in the decision-making process, as long as they align that 51% with the values of the organization, with the mission of the organization. But that 51% says that you're going to stand out in front of those decisions. And as a disciplined person who executes, you're going to execute that as long as it's moral, as long as it's just.
Yeah. And when people's lives are at stake, of course, that's what everyone wants you to do. So thanks for doing that. And thanks for carrying those values forward in these environments. So as you moved up in the fire service, maybe we could talk a little bit about what it was like to be a battalion chief. And you can tell us civilians, what is a battalion chief and how is it different from a fire chief?
Different lens, actually. It's a junior opportunity to hone your chief leadership skills. I'll take the Oakland Fire Department as the example. Oakland has various divisions. They have three battalions. And so you have Battalion 2, you have Battalion 3, Battalion 4. You also have a training division where there's a battalion chief in charge. When I first became a battalion chief, I was in charge of Battalion 3. And then there are three battalion chiefs within that battalion, A, B, and C shift. And so this is your opportunity to demonstrate to your superiors that, hey, I'm not only executing my job, but I'm honing myself for the next step in my career. And my job as the battalion chief was to make sure that my people were well-resourced to do the job, to do check-ins with them, to make sure that the schedule was set appropriately and that our stations were staffed to meet our community's needs. In addition to that, to give guidance. And so the current chief of the Oakland Fire Department was a lieutenant in my department. I knew he was going to be headed for greater things. He was a fantastic lieutenant, and I knew he would be chief one day. But when I had arrived, we were 800 inspections behind. We had people whose certifications were out of date. And there was a litany of other issues that were going on. However, assigning each person, each officer in my battalion, I made a training chief in my battalion, which was unheard of. I made a compliance officer, which was unheard of. I gave everybody responsibilities. And by the time I had left Battalion 3, we were compliant with everything. And we were actually the number one performing battalion. I went over and became the chief of training. And I did that stint for approximately 2.5 years. And as chief of training, I had to reevaluate what it is we were doing because the fire service is changing. And so are we changing for the mission yesterday? Or are we changing for the mission for tomorrow? And so I changed for tomorrow's mission. And we actually revamped the entire training curriculum. I published the very first annual training plan that the Oakland Fire Department had. I reached out to the department and found a bunch of interested people who wanted to be contributors. And they volunteered their services to actually feed information back to me so we can put that in as curriculum. And those are some of the functions of a battalion chief. It is an opportunity for you to first have a mid-level responsibility and to hone that and to actually show that you can take on greater responsibility within the organization.
That's really terrific as an explanation. And as you're talking, I'm listening to some implicit values that were shaping the culture you were building there in that first battalion. Can you say a couple words about what those guiding values were then and maybe how they evolved as you became chief?
Yeah. So I think the values that I wanted to instill, I thought that was very important, was mission first and people always, meaning our mission is actually to serve our community. Be ready to respond. Serve the people compassionately. Is this how you want the service to be rendered to you, or is this how you want the service to be rendered to your mother? And then not only being selfless in that service, but to make sure that we take care of each other as well. It's an organization of high incidents. You can get burned out quite quickly, so we have to look out for each other. And that's what I tried to instill in them, and I know that it's continuing. I will just go back to the lieutenant that I had is now the chief of the department, and he lives up to all those values. And I would say that he had those values. So whether it's myself instilling them or just reinforcing them,
that's so exciting. And I think for many leaders, seeing someone from your early teams rise to such a rank is often, I don't want to say a source of pride, but a reflection of effectiveness. Really good leaders develop other leaders.
Yeah, and I would say it is a sense of pride. I'm very proud to see that.
So now as you transitioned into becoming fire chief, how did the leadership requirements change and how did you have to change?
Yeah. So you're never chief until you're chief. So you can have an idea about it. But once you're sitting in the seat, it's a different ballgame because it's not the same role. You're looking at budget more than anything. You're building those horizontal relationships with all the other departments and you're competing for dollars to build out programs that you want. While at the same time, you're very visible. You have to be out in the public. You have to really level set with the community to find out what they're asking for in their fire service. And that was a huge learning curve, for sure, to be confronted with a dwindling budget and having ideas that you probably can't even launch, but they're sitting on the pad and you're waiting for the opportunity. And so, yeah, my ascension into the fire chief role was not in Oakland. I moved to just down the road to the city of Richmond, California. Again, another high-speed organization, a city at need with a bunch of firefighters who are interested in making more than certain that they serve the citizens. But we had challenges resourcing them. They had old firehouses. They had firehouses that didn't have restrooms for women, stuff like that. And so trying to get the dollars for that made it very challenging. And those are the fires you try to put out as a fire chief rather than the actual fires.
Oh, that's a really good expression. So were there particular moments, either in Oakland or in Richmond, where you had to really confront something in yourself and push yourself to grow?
Oh, well, every day. Yeah, there's no question about that. Every day. But it's widely known that when I was in the city of Richmond, there was a vote of no confidence on me. And that's one of those things where you sit back and you have to do a bit of reflection and understand yourself and how you contributed to this vote. And so I'd like to say I don't take exception to it, but that would be somewhat untrue. But what you have to do is you have to be resilient. You have to be able to take the criticisms. And I'll tell you, the day after the vote of no confidence, I walked into the office the same time I walked into the office every day previously. I'd seen the union president and I said good morning to him. And he looked at me strangely and smiled. And then I came back and I invited him out for lunch. And we actually went out to lunch. And again, I think it takes someone to have the understanding to say we need to see through our differences. And we approach the problem from a different view in this prism. And so I know you may see it one way. I see it differently. But these are the things that I'm working on. And I think that when we're able to sit down and socialize that amongst ourselves, there is greater understanding. And I don't think that the former union president, he's since retired since I've been gone, but I don't think that he would say this was an untruth. But this is one of the things where they said, you didn't deserve what we did to you. And they're on record as saying we wanted to cool that back. But it is what it is. The cake is baked at that point. I don't take exception to it because, you know, I play a part in that. And one of the criticisms was that I wasn't fighting hard enough for them. Well, I can't sit there and disabuse them of the fights that I am having with the finance director or whomever, because that's not my place as a leader. As a leader, when you do go into these rooms and have conversations with other principals, you go out and you say, well, this is the direction we're going in. Not that I fought with this person. That's not what you do as a leader. And so that was one of the biggest challenges. First time I had ever experienced anything like that in my leadership. I was well received as a leader, not only in Oakland, but throughout my military career. I'd always been recognized as a compassionate leader, one who had connections with his people. And so this was the first time I had experienced that. And I had to sit back and say, yeah, but even in baseball, you don't hit the ball every single time. In fact, if you hit it 3 out of 10 times, you get into the Hall of Fame.
It's good to have those comparisons to measure against.
Absolutely. And I think that just part of my maturation is as a fire chief and as a leader, you have to learn how to be a good loser and take your lick and grow from that. And that was one of those opportunities. I had the confidence of the council. I had the confidence of my city manager. So I stayed on the job. And I would say that the union said, hey, you know, if you want to stay, we're not going to do anything and be welcome to stay. But by that time, I felt like they needed new leadership because I certainly couldn't get done what they had desired.
So was there something you learned? It was a reckoning with yourself about, like in retrospect, what might you have done differently now that you've learned so much more?
I think that better communication, how you communicate. I go back and I look at some of the communications I sent out by way of email to the entire department because I do try to be very transparent. But maybe I could have been a better communicator as far as the challenges that we were facing. Why we didn't have money for new stations when they needed it. But before I left, I bought all brand new fire engines, brand new fire trucks, new equipment. Resource and people. And then at the same time, there's a lot of things that go unseen. And I think that that's the challenge for leaders nowadays, especially for the fire chief, is that you're trying to make sure that there's a strong foundation. And so they don't see what's holding everything up. And so I focused on making sure that we had good rules, regulations, policies, procedures, making sure that those things were in place as opposed to, well, here's the new fire station. A lot of other things to fall in place before that.
I'm hearing a lot of block and tackle, and I can only imagine. So one of the things I love doing on this podcast is talking to leaders from a wide range of different environments and circumstances in different industries and roles. And so we've had a lot of people from the business world and a number of people from not-for-profit, but we really haven't had a chance to talk to too many people leading within our government operations. And so that's one of the things I'm really valuing about your stories today is I'm hearing a lot of that middle management similarity that you're in that place where you are both supporting the decisions that you make with your fellow leaders and also needing to lead and reflect with your team. And sometimes there's a gap between what the team wants and what you can provide.
And there is absolutely that. You're correct. And how do you message that when you go back to the team? Because you have to support the team that you just left too, your peers.
It's a tough spot. So as you moved up to Redmond, anything really different about this position for you? And what's your growth in this area? And how are you evolving today?
Well, constantly evolving. That's the fantastic part about it. But what I found was that firefighters will do their research. They will know you better than you know yourself. And so I wanted to make sure that I messaged appropriately. And before I got here, I wrote a letter to them to let them know how excited I was to be coming up here and being a part of this team. It was very intentional about getting out and actually meeting everyone and telling them that, hey, nothing's off the table. Please, let's talk. And so I would bring stuff up. I said, I'm sure you've done your research and that you've seen that there was a vote of no confidence on me. But it wasn't as much as a vote of no confidence, in my opinion, as much as it was a vote of confidence. It was a vote of confidence because they were very confident that I was going to do my job. That was a problem. I did my job and they understood that. They didn't like some of the things I did when I did my job. So ask me all the questions and then let me know what's important to you. Some of the things that hadn't been done here was they didn't have a strategic plan. They hadn't done a standard of cover. And I know that the listening public probably won't know what a standard of cover is, but that's really a measurement on how we can actually respond and be effective in our community. And they had endeavored to do that for maybe 4 or 5 years prior to my arrival. And so I gave my word to the mayor and to the COO that I would get this done. I built my team and we got that done within the first year. And we pushed that out through the organization. Something very important about our standard of cover and strategic plan. We give that to every new member joining the department. We want them to know this is what we're trying to do. You want to know our mission, vision, values, and goals? Look inside our strategic plan. If you have questions about it, give me a call. And right on the very front, it says, at your service. That's really what we want people to know, that we are at your service. When it came up to writing the new mission, vision, values, and goals, people said, well, what do you want inside there, Chief? And I said, I don't want to put anything inside there. I want you to go to the junior members of this organization because they're the ones who are going to live it. And I want them to come up with it and then bring it back to me so I can see. And we can wordsmith it or whatever when I hear you saying here, but it's theirs. And so whenever they're out there, or whenever somebody says, I wonder why they have this as a mission or the vision of the values, that person can say, actually, we're the ones who came up with that. And what I found is that we have a motivated group of people here, the very best in the industry. We have people coming from Japan, from Brazil, Israel, coming here to look to see why our medical program is so good. When I first got here, our cardiac survival rate was 57.7%. The national average is probably 10. And in 2023, we pushed that up to 67%. And a philosophy of ours is to protect people, not things. And if I were to contrast between the Redmond Fire Department and other fire departments nationally, when you go to a structure fire nationally, you'll send first alarm assignment, usually around 14 or 15 people. But when you go to a medical call, you're getting an engine with 4 people on it, and probably an ambulance will show up later. For us, we get a cardiac event, we send 14 people to that. That patient always has hands on their chest. They're always getting oxygen. They're always being worked, and it's yielded itself out to be successful. I'll give you one more example. Elijah McClain was a young man who lost his life in Colorado, and there was a case and there was an outcome on that. But we wanted to make more than certain that we evaluated that, weighed ourselves against that response, find out if there were any shortcomings in that response, and making more than certain that we're not doing those things, and making always, always certain that we see the patient as the patient. Not a problem, not somebody who's disenfranchised if they are, not this nuisance who woke me up at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. We want to see them as the patient. And so that's why we're the very best. And that's something that I learned. I learned to make sure that I'm a good communicator. I'm very intentional about getting out of my seat and going to a fire station and visiting someone to have a conversation with them. I'm just really just making sure that we're building relationships with people.
So a lot of us out here in the general public see fire and EMS work mostly on TV and in film. Most of us, thankfully, don't experience that care in person, and we are grateful. I just wonder, what is different about real-world fire service leadership versus what do we see in the dramas?
Yeah, and I think that's it. It's a drama, but it's very sanitized. When you're watching television, you don't pick up on the smells. You don't pick up on the cold, you don't see the festering injury or something like that. And those things could have long-term effects on the responders as well as the person who's actually in need of care. And so in actuality, it is far more difficult to do the job. You injure yourself picking up the patient. The scene is not always a sanitized scene. There's needles out, so on and so forth. Our minds are triggered by smells. So when you smell something there later on, that may get triggered again when you smell it, that same smell somewhere else. And it brings back all the memories of the bad call that you were on. And we made more than certain we do have a mental health provider here in our department and a dog to make sure that our people can debrief with her. And the dog has just been incredible. It's trained to actually give you a hug, believe it or not. It's amazing.
Oh, gee, I'd love to see a picture of that.
Yeah, it's just so fantastic. But we take the dog everywhere and her people enjoy it. But yeah, the difference between what's on television, the dramas, in actuality, it is that it's far more difficult. It's not always the very clean patient, stuff like that. These are people who are having a very difficult time. And we have to make sure that we recognize that this is their hard time and it's our job to get them to a better place.
It's such a strong and powerful mission. How does it shape the behaviors that you ask of your team members?
Yeah, well, shape the behaviors and reinforce the behaviors, right? I think that one of my philosophies too, certainly, if the behaviors aren't there, you have to be willing to change people. And if you can't change people, then you have to change people. Hopefully that's understood. But to make sure that you do have a workforce that has the proper mindset and to reinforce that constantly, to give thanks, I'm called, without exaggeration, I'm called almost weekly by somebody in the community to say, thank you for the level of service that you have provided me. And it's not beyond me to write an email back out to my people, especially to the individuals on that call, to give them thanks, praise them, recognize them, and just constantly letting them know, reinforcing, you're doing exactly what it is we expect, and we're so appreciative of it. In addition to that, we have a mobile integrated health program. We all actually make house calls. We give you proper resource navigation. I think that's very important. Fall protection inside your house if you're elderly, making sure that you're able to get your prescriptions. We've driven prescriptions a couple of hundred miles to people. We had some wildfires and people were displaced. They couldn't get their prescription medications. Our medics go out, get the prescription filled at the local pharmacy and drive it out to that person. People who are unhoused, we're out there making sure that we're having contacts with them, navigating them to the appropriate resource. If you have a substance issue, we want to make more than certain that we address those challenges and get you to where you need to be. So those are the things that have actually informed me and helped me grow even more, benefited our community greatly.
So let's imagine you write a book called Leadership Lessons from a Fire Chief. What would you want to put in that book? What are a couple of the biggest tips you'd want to put in there?
Yeah. So interestingly, I am writing a book.
No. Is it called Leadership Lessons from a Fire Chief?
It's not. The acceleration of change, leadership. And so acceleration being the actual formula for acceleration. So there's a couple different ways you can deal with things with people. People already have momentum. Organizations already have momentum. They're already going in a direction. And you may need to make gentle nudges along the way in order to get them in the direction that you need to go in. And so what's that force you're going to apply? And you don't want to impact it. You don't want to go head on with it. You just want to get up to speed with it. And then you want to ride alongside it. And then you want to start doing all these little nudges that change that trajectory to foster that acceleration of change. And so in my book that I am writing, you know, to talk about it, because it really goes back to, have I confronted issues in the past and could I have done that differently? Could I have given a gentle nudge as opposed to saying, well, I don't like that and we're not going to do it? When I juxtapose military leadership as opposed to leadership in the fire service, in the military, you have absolute authority. So I say, get something done as an officer, you're going to do it. You execute. That's not the reality in the fire service. And that's good. People have unions. People question and you have to hone your leadership because you don't have that absolute authority. You have to be able to work in this environment and work with people and balance that weight against what other opinions are, whatever that issue is. And so my book will address stuff like that. How do you do that? It's really about leadership humility.
That's really lovely to think about, leadership humility. And it's an offset to the kind of ego that often drives lots of us, certainly for the first halves of our lives. That's very typical, that we want to accomplish and be productive and performative, and we want to do well and achieve. There's a point at which I think there starts to be a shift from driven by role to driven by soul.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Talk to us about that shift for you.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, when you're very young, you're very ambitious, right? And I won't fault any young person for being ambitious like that. Pardon the plug here, but my daughter is about ready to graduate from West Point. She's very ambitious and out there and honing her very junior leadership mix right now. And so that's a very good thing. But once you arrive and I'll speak for my position. Once you arrive at fire chief position, doesn't mean that you've arrived at a destination. It's just a journey. And so you get out and you actually have to go out there and lead with compassion, lead through your heart, that servant's heart, as they say, right? And so some of the different challenges that I have as a leader nowadays is, and I think that leadership today is more critical, more need, more challenging than ever before. Your workforce is better informed than ever before, and they have that information at their fingertips. So you have to be informed when you're in front of them because they'll check everything you say. But I think that one of the very important things that one must do as a leader very early on in the role of a fire chief is to make more than certain that you're making those connections with your people, to have that soul, one, to be there for not only for them, but for the community. Something that we're doing here in the Ripon Fire Department that hopefully I can brag about this a little bit is we're going to be the first fire department in the state of Washington that has an electric fire engine.
Wow.
And so people say, wow, you're grasping technology. And technology was probably the last thing we considered when looking at an electric fire engine. This was viewed through a DEI lens, believe it or not. And it harkens all the way back to my time as a lieutenant in Oakland when I worked in West Oakland, which is a very industrialized area. And we had a lot of people who had industrial asthma in that area. And, you know, we've got freeways going through there, so they're getting that exhaust. And those things all inform me as a fire chief and a person who can make decisions. And so here, we wanted to make sure that we did have an apparatus that contributed to the betterment of our environment, right? We were spilling diesel exhaust into the community, right? We have a population here that's a little bit older in certain areas. We want to make sure that we didn't spill noise into the community, right? And so those are the things that we considered when we were getting this new apparatus. And then we talked about the technology, but we actually looked at it through how are we being better stewards of our environment and of our community first.
I have to say, I'm feeling so encouraged from our conversation to think that there might be people like you in every community in our country. I hope there are.
I think so. Yeah, I think that I continue to learn and grow from the fire chiefs around me. It's not beyond me to call the Seattle fire chief up and say, hey, can we go out for lunch? He's recognized as a leader throughout this region. I learned from the Bellevue chief. And, you know, they're just good people who are willing to impart their knowledge and really to lower those tripwires for somebody who endeavors to do something.
Yeah. So one of the things I'd love to do on this podcast is ask everybody, what does the title mean to you, to lead as human?
Yeah, to lead as human. That's a great question. I really appreciate that. Love to explore it. But to lead as human means that we're not infallible, for one, right? But it's about that humility. It's about compassion. That's what being human is, right? And being a part of society, this is a social contract. And I think we're supposed to take care of people. We have transitional students who come in and put packages together. We go over to their center and we speak to them and truly try to help them out. And they may be chronologically 25 years old. Mentally, they're not there and look up to you, and you just want to give them hugs and you just want to talk to them, and they see you as this larger than life figure. And even though you know you're not, you want to live it for them. You want to do it for them, and you want to be that. So to lead as human is all the things that come along with being human, being imperfect, being your best, serving our fellow person. It's something that we're doing here, trying to develop the fire service and making sure that we're meeting all the needs, every member of our community, people identify in so many different ways. And so that means that we actually have to go out and we have to recruit people who identify differently, or we want to make sure that we have people who are okay being openly gay in the fire service. That's typically not been the case. And we want to make sure if somebody has transitioned, that this is a safe space for you. This is a welcome and warm place. And so one thing is to go out and recruit these people into the profession, but we also have to build that cultural fluency inside of our organization. Redmond is a very diverse community, and it's just amazing how people can grow and develop just by socializing and coming together and saying, you know what, maybe I thought differently, but I see now that this is not an issue for me. So to grow and develop as an individual and as an organization, that's that humanistic part of it.
Yeah. Wow. Gosh, I'm really so inspired and so grateful today for this conversation, Adrian. So thank you so much for being with us and sharing what it's like to lead in our government, in our governmental organizations. I am certain that our listeners will want to know about your book. So give us a little tip about when and where we're going to be able to find out about it.
Yeah, geez, you know, I've actually started working on this some time ago, but I'm looking to get this done sometime in 2025.
Fabulous. Well, be sure to let us know when it comes available. Any parting words you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, this has been a good exchange, and I really appreciate it. And I want to just thank you, the listening audience, for the pleasure of your time. I enjoy speaking about this profession. It's one of the best professions there is. And I'm so fortunate to sit in my role, but more fortunate to serve with just a fantastic group of human beings who are willing to go out and make sure that they're serving the needs of everyone. So thank you for having me today, and thank you for allowing me to talk about my organization.
It's been a real pleasure. Please stay with us for a moment, and I'll share some takeaways and a coaching tip designed to help you uplevel your own leadership starting today. Adrian summed up his values as mission first, people always, and service to your community. In our conversation, I was so struck at how similar Adrian's leadership principles are to many of our prior guests, even though he works in the most paramilitary type environment, meaning kind of command and control, where following orders needs to be absolute at times. Yet even in this environment, he says, leaders need to be authentic, show appropriate vulnerability, that they don't know everything, and humility, that despite their positional authority, they still need to earn the trust of their teams in order to be successful. And they must display compassion for and take a personal interest in their people. One very different point that Adrian and I chatted about was discipline, a word that has really fallen out of favor. I appreciated that Adrian reminds us that discipline is more about being self-disciplined, not about having other people discipline us, as in punish. So I'm thinking a little differently about discipline after our conversation. Regarding the idea of followership, while obedience must be absolute when in the field, Adrian also describes how he expects his team to have each other's back. In other words, to watch out for and care for one another as a way for them to manage the strong emotions that might come up during their work experiences. Which makes me wonder, how do you emphasize your team having each other's back, caring for each other in your organization? Among all our guests to date, Adrian certainly faced the most public difficult feedback when the union gave him a vote of no confidence, and he learned how to receive that with grace. He took away from it how to communicate differently, so that he could both be loyal and in solidarity with his peers, while also explaining to his team, for example, that some resource limitations might be out of his control. And he figured out how to do so without throwing his peers under the bus, or in this case, the fire truck. Here's your self-development tip from today. Adrian described his leadership journey as an upward spiral of growth. I invite you to take a moment and envision the spiral of your own leadership journey. Execs that I work with often remark, once they revisit a past challenge, that they recognize they can now confidently move through similar situations, but at a higher level of sophistication. And that's how I think about this upward spiral. Take a few minutes to reflect on your own leadership journey, and maybe jot down the last few lessons you've learned and the next challenge you plan to tackle. With a bit more intentionality, you can reach the next rung on your ladder more quickly. I'm Sharon Richmond, and this has been To Lead as Human. You can find out more about me at leadinglarge.com. That's LEADING large.com. To Lead as Human is part of the Miracy FM podcast network, which also includes Making It and Once Upon a Business. This episode was produced by Cynthia Lamb. Andrew Chapman assembled the episode. Danny Eney is our executive producer, and post-production was provided by Marvin Del Rosario. So you don't miss upcoming episodes, please follow us on Miracy FM's YouTube channel or on your favorite podcast player. Your starred review really helps us reach more listeners. And tell a colleague something you learned today. The more leaders we can reach, the faster we can help them grow. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time on To Lead as Human.